I wanted to mention today that we're going to take an intermission from the subject we've been covering, which was the beware of false preachers, in light of the fact that it is the 4th of July. It is the 4th of July, and we're told to speak in season and out of season, and I know it pertains to the holy days. But the 4th of July is a season. It is a season. It's certainly a secular season, a patriotic time, a time to express appreciation and gratitude, I believe, for a country that has provided so many with so much. And it is special in that way. America, the United States, this republic that started officially back in 1776 when it declared its independence, and then thereafter the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, these other documents that added to the foundation of what makes this nation to be, followed, and certainly is something that I believe merits our deep appreciation and gratitude for everything it has provided, including not only to us as citizens here in the United States, but also to the world in many respects in the world, because the fact of it is, hey, we'd all be speaking probably German on the East Coast, as I've often said, and Japanese on the West Coast if it weren't for the balance of powers of World War I and World War II that took place in the 20th century. But unfortunately and sadly, there are people that do not want this country to be what it is today. They're called culture cancelists. They want to cancel the culture. They want to go ahead and not only cancel the culture, but deconstruct the history. And taking it a step further, even going ahead and rewriting some of the history. I want to talk today about some observations that I have, that I know many of you share, because I've talked with many of you about similar observations. But I also want to talk about some concerns. And then thirdly, I want to leave you with some encouragement and hopefully some scriptures to keep in mind as to where we sit in the timeline that we're at today. Because we are in a very precarious situation. And sadly, the United States of America did not listen to its political prophets just this side of World War II. What am I talking about? I'm talking about Harry Truman. Harry Truman, who was indeed a Democrat. So this is not about party. This is about policy. He established, for all intents and purposes, NATO. And NATO was indeed established to stop the infiltration of communism, to prevent and hopefully eliminate the encroachment of Marxist ideologies, of which was indeed a concern in 1946, 1947. Even Eisenhower, in his departing words after John F. Kennedy won the election, he himself warned the United States, the people of America, beware of the military-industrial complex. What was he talking about? He was talking about the deep state. He was talking about legal systems that were out of control, working their own agendas apart from political control and political vision. And of course, the McCarthy era, many of us, if you're familiar with it, was nothing more than Joe McCarthy, a senator, I think he was from Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken, who was on a mission. And the mission was all about uncovering, disclosing, finding out who in the world were these communists working within the system. This was in the 1950s. And guess what? Charlie Chaplin was basically what you could say exiled to Europe by his own choice. Edward G. Robbins, even Gypsy Rose Lee, the stripper, the well-known or infamous stripper of the 1950s, was accused of being a communist. Danny Kaye was also on this infamous list of communists that the McCarthy era had flushed out in the 1950s. in the 1950s, brethren. And then, of course, you have John F. Kennedy, who gave a speech back on April 27, 1961. He delivered this speech at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel to the American Newspaper and Publishers Association on what some have used as the basis of a conspiracy theory that says that he gave a speech about secret societies 1 week before he was assassinated, and then he was killed a week later. That's false. He did not give a speech of such. But he did give this one in 1961. I want to share with you just a little bit of the verbiage that he said. And keep in mind, he's speaking from the standpoint of the Cold War. He's speaking with the framing of Russia and the Bolsheviks and the Marxists infiltrating, encroaching, setting up their shop, so to speak, to become a counterpower to the United States back after World War II. We're talking the late 40s and 50s, early 60s. We call that the Cold War era, where everybody was building their bombs and basically sitting on them and using them as deterrents for each other. But Kennedy said this as he spoke with that as a framing. The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweigh the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, 1961, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. Prophetic. Prophetic. He goes on real quickly here. But we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means by expanding its sphere of influence. What's he talking about? He's talking about the deep state. He's talking about that industrial military outfit that Eisenhower warned us about. He's talking about people and groups and organizations that were freely operating within the United States throughout the 50s and the 60s and the 40s and even in the 30s, if you can make the case with the Bolsheviks, that were infiltrating Marxist ideas, communistic ideologies, of which the politicians of the United States knew throughout all those decades. This is what Kennedy is addressing, and he's addressing it in such a way that he's saying that, he goes on here, and let me go back here, the ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on a covert means for expanding its sphere of influence on infiltration, that's one of their methods, instead of invasion, subversion, instead of elections, intimidation, instead of a free choice, on guerrillas by night, instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced. They're either murdered or paid off. That's what that means. Not praised. No expenditure is questioned. Whatever it takes, get it done. No matter what the money, no matter whose life is on the board or on the line, kill him or pay him off. It's all unquestioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed. It conducts the Cold War, and that's what, in his mind, he was concerned about. In short, with a wartime discipline no democracies would ever hope or wish to match. And as I say, talking about Marx's policies that he himself was concerned about and the infiltration of what the McCarthy era had uncovered, along with, of course, what Eisenhower was warning about. All of these things, brethren, are indeed concerns back then and today. If you're not seeing it, brethren, if you're not seeing it, your eyes are not open. Because from 1960s to where we are today, it has exponentially grown to the point where every layer of our social strata is infected with Marxist ideas, from our politicians to our educational sectors to our entertainment section. All these segments of our society are indeed infiltrated, and we are, unfortunately, being steered to being, what you could say, taken over by Marxist ideology. Now, this last week, I had an opportunity to attend a meeting. And this meeting was a pastor. His name is Palowski, Pastor Palowski. He's from Calgary, Canada. And this meeting, I had a chance to meet him personally as well as listen to his presentation. He has been arrested. Did you hear me? I said he's in Canada, from Canada, not China. He's not from Russia. He lives in Calgary, Canada, and he and his brother were arrested here just some months ago over the fact of them, and I'll tell you what the charges are here in a minute, but he is currently now, due to the arrest and the fines that he has incurred as a result of not abiding by the Canadian government's COVID restrictions, has racked up hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines. He has 30 tickets, they call them, of fines of not submitting to the government's restrictions that have called for him not to exceed 25% of his seating capacity at his church building, and of which right now, in stage two, as I understand with Canada, they're hoping to go to stage three, which would get them back to more of a normal situation where their freedoms would be more normalized. But stage two still has some very serious restrictions. Number one, if I understand it right, number one, you can't have more than five people in your home in Canada right now. I've got more than that in my family. I couldn't even have them all over for dinner. I'd be in violation. 25% capacity of any place where you're at. In Toronto, we've got a congregation of about 80 to 100 people. I visited them about every 5 to 6 weeks. A room that can facilitate about 100 people. What does that mean? It means that we can only put 25 people in that room. 25 people in that room. And right now they can't meet because the church building that we rent is not even open because the Trinity Presbyterian Church has refused to open its doors because they've got themselves all shut down with their congregants online, like what we're doing there in Canada. And so Canada is really, in many respects, wrapped up, and Pastor Palowski is going around and across the United States, all over the country, to warn America, to warn Canada. Why? He came out of Poland when Poland was communistic, and he knows. He's seen this act before. He understands how communism works, and he understands how the Marxist ideas infiltrate, embed, and infect into a society to the point where the concessions of freedom are made and the people just march along. Put the mask on. Can't go in. 25 people, you're 26, out. And that's going on right now, brethren, in some respects. And consequently, all because he would not abide to the restrictions placed by the Canadian government. And so he was charged with inciting a religious meeting. That's his charge. Him and his brother, look it up, Pawlowski, Pawlowski. You can find him on the internet. You'll watch a video of him being handcuffed in the street by the Calgary Canadian police, him and his brother, hauled off to jail to where today he faces hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines and up to 4 years in jail for inciting a religious meeting. These are things that are happening in Canada, of all places. You would think maybe China, maybe Russia, but Canada? And so we have this. Why? Because he did not want to submit to the overreach of the Canadian government. Most Christians today do not realize, nor do they recognize, the identity of America and Great Britain being the birthrighted nations. I happen to believe that the United States of America and the British Commonwealth are indeed the recipients of this birthright promise that was offered to Abraham back in Genesis 11. You can make the case very clearly that that was indeed given to Abraham, as well as the promise of a scepter, that his seed would be the family by which all nations would be blessed by. But regardless of that, even if you do not embrace that understanding or recognition, the United States of America, and the facts are clear, God raised them up to be a balance of power. And as I said already in passing, that World War I and World War II, I believe, demonstrates that very clearly, that if indeed the Allies, along with the United States and the Brits, were not there to push back on the Nazis and Hirohito, that we would have a whole different world back in the 20th century. And I don't think I'd get much of an argument from any of you with that regard. So it's very easy, and I believe agreeable, to recognize the fact the United States of America has embraced the God of Israel. So regardless of whether or not you believe that we are indeed the birthrighted nations, the birthrighted people, the fulfillment of that birthrighted promise, doesn't matter. Regardless, we cannot deny, our history proves, we've embraced the God of Israel. We have not embraced Allah. We have not embraced the Hindu gods, Buddha. We haven't embraced any of those other types of gods that are throughout the world. We have embraced and adopted the God of Israel, and as a result, are very closely tied in many respects to Israel's profile. And sadly, it appears, we're following suit in the decline of Israel's destiny. And we have that history in your Bible as to what happened to the 10 tribes, which was Israel, and of course Judah to the south, that followed suit some 120 years later under the hands of the Babylonians. And we understand that. But the Jews, of course, returning 70 years later, we recognize that as well. But the point of it is that now we have, without a doubt, infiltrations of demonic, humanistic, Marxist influences, brethren, that are constantly bombarding us with attempts to change our culture, to adopt different methods and ways of educating our children, of how to view our history, of what is defining real freedom and what isn't. You know, the Great Reset's predicate is that they want to control the world and you own nothing. And you'll be happy, they say. You'll be happy. Well, why don't we tell that to Bill Gates or Warren Buffett and have them? I used to always get a kick out of John Lennon's song, Imagine. Imagine there's, you know, this, and he goes through this whole scenario of things, and I'm wondering, why don't you just donate all your money? Why don't you donate the whole estate of the Beatles that you own and have nothing? That's what you're singing about. Be a man of your word then, John, you know. But my point is, words are cheap. Actions are precious. And brethren, we need to wake up and understand we are under siege. This nation is definitely under siege. Now, this should not be a surprise to any of us. This is an observation. We're still talking about observations. I'd like to turn to 2 Timothy for a moment. 2 Timothy chapter 3. And in this particular case, Paul is telling Timothy prophetically of the kind of profile of people that are going to be in the latter days. So I want to park here and spend the bulk of the remaining presentation in 2 Timothy chapter 3. He says this in verse 1. This know also, that in the last days, perilous times, difficult, that means to mean dangerous or fierce times would be in the latter days. And so as a result, you have this recognition that Paul's warning Timothy that you better buckle up, because in the latter days, it's going to be fierce. It's going to be dangerous. It's going to be perilous for those Christian people, for people that follow the way of Christ. Pastor Pawlowski will tell you very clearly that it is perilous and it is costly. And in this case, his case, may cost him 4 years of his life in jail and hundreds of, that'll bankrupt that church, because you're only talking about a small congregation there in Calgary. So here Paul goes ahead with Timothy and he says, first thing out of the box in verse 2, he says, for men shall be lovers of their own selves. They're going to be very selfish. They're going to be very, very self-driven, self-oriented. They're going to be really attentive to their own needs and how they can gain, how they can go ahead and prosper, how they can take advantage of whatever opportunities come their way so that they can personally benefit by whatever it is that they think they can multiply. Now, as I go through this, brethren, I want you to take some time. I want you to think, and I could say names, but I'm not going to. I want you to just think of the names. I want you to think of the names of the politicians that we have in place. You've seen them on TV. I don't care what party they are. I don't care if they're Republicans, Libertarians, or Democrats. Doesn't matter. We're not talking party politics here. We're talking policy. Policies. And what policies any administration employs. Remember, Truman was a Democrat. Eisenhower was a Republican. Kennedy was a Democrat. They all were political prophets that we should have listened to, regardless of their party. That's my point. That's my point. And so as a result, today we have this situation where leaders, movie stars, entertainers, sports personalities are making humongous amounts of money and oftentimes claiming certain things are unjust and inequitable and so on. But yet you don't see a whole lot of them. Some of them you do. They're not all bad. Don't get me wrong and don't take me out of context. But many of them have a big mouth and talk a big stick, but they don't walk the walk. They just blare out complaints and all these kinds of things and don't really do a whole lot in trying to repair or remedy it. And so as a result, we see selfishness really growing. And of course, covetous. The second point here, which means this Greek word also can mean fond of money. I mean, how many steaks can you eat, Warren Buffett? How many houses can you own, Mr. Gates? When does money really, you know, come into a lack of fondness? When can you give it up, so to speak, and begin to share it? Now, granted, there are foundations that allegedly some of these men and women have, of which in some cases under a certain guise may be viewed as doing good, but under the backdrop, you wonder what the agenda is as being driven to do what they're trying to do. And in some cases, you know them by their fruit. You see what they're doing and how they're doing these things with the money that they're using to manipulate circumstances. And that's dangerous, brethren, because money, of course, is a tremendous tool if you got a lot about it. Braggers, that is, In this case, we see they would be boasters. The Greek word can also mean braggers. They are not shy about expressing their accomplishments, what they're known for, what they've achieved, and how these achievements and accomplishments have made them who they are. So consequently, look, you better listen to me. You know, you better follow suit. You better concede to where I'm leading you, because I know what I'm talking about, because look at all that I've accomplished, look at all that I've achieved. Proud, Paul says, proud. And in this particular case, again, it can mean haughty and condescending, thinking that they're better than you. And we know and are very familiar with the fact that there are elitists. We heard the word elitists among us. And these elitists feel they're entitled to basically rule the roost. And in some cases, they go ahead and throw their hat in the ring for hope to be part of that elitist group of control so that they can continue to enjoy the good life at the expense of so many others. Over here, you have, in this particular case, blasphemous. We see here blasphemers. The Greek is very indicative of being impious against God and railing. What is that all about? What's blasphemy? Putting the Ten Commandments up on a wall in a school is blasphemy. Why wouldn't you put the Ten Commandments on the wall in a school for a kindergarten or first, second, third, fourth, or fifth grade? I mean, that's blasphemous. Why would you not want the Word of God in the schools? Why would you not want the children to stand up and do a prayer and maybe rotate around the room, and Johnny says it today, and Molly says it tomorrow, and Sally says it that day, and so forth and so on, and open up the school day with a prayer to God, to instill God in your life and in the life and hearts of the children while they're young, instead of the Marxist ideas that are being promoted, like transvestites reading books in libraries to five-year-olds. What's that all about? And sadly, it is about trying to hijack your kids into areas where they result in confusion, not knowing whether or not they're boys, not knowing whether or not they're girls. I just did a presentation on examining transgenderism. It'll be out hopefully next week. But it's an approach in trying to understand who's doing this, where's it coming from, how is it happening, and who's allowing it. How did over 100 words get into the vocabulary that describes gender? When I look around, I see girls, I see boys, you know, and there are... Never mind. I'm going to digress and use all my time going in a different direction. I'm not going there. But at any rate, you can hear much of it next week when the program is released. But the bottom line is, brethren, we are being infiltrated and hijacked. I use the word derailed into going into areas that are not biblically founded. And as a result, it's confusion. And God even mentions that as well, that it is indeed confusion. But at any rate, disobedient to parents doesn't need a whole lot of description. That's self-defining in itself. Unthankful. Gwen Berry. How many of you have heard that name? Gwen Berry. She was the Olympic one who ended up in third place, bronze star. And as a result, when the national anthem was being played, she turned away. There she is representing the United States. This isn't a political platform. This is sports. This is the nation picked you out of all that you competed against because in their evaluation, you were determined to be the best in your way, in your section, in your segment of the sport. So, I mean, where's the gratitude? Where's the thankfulness? Brings to mind a joke when I was thinking about John picking the song, the national anthem, and this Mexican fella, Jose, went to America, and I had a chance to go ahead and go to a ball game, and as a result of going to the ball game, there were no seats left, so he decided to climb up the flagpole, sit up there, watch the ball game, and they open up, You know, Jose, can you see? And he comes back to Mexico and he says, so how was America? He says, it was great. They said, it was? He says, yeah. They sang to me. They said, Jose, you know. I know, bad joke. Can you see? But at any rate, back to Timothy here. He says, unthankful, unholy. That means basically wicked and evil. And there are wicked and evil people, especially when you combine that without, in verse 3, without natural affection. And I could basically go on and on for the next hour in talking about hard-hearted and merciless people who are involved in, how about sucker punching a 60, 70-year-old Asian woman on the sidewalk in downtown New York City, or a girl walking home down in Brooklyn here just a few days ago, and some guy running behind her tackles her and gropes her right on the sidewalk there in daylight. Or how about the guy that's pumping gas and a nice petite 90-pound woman screaming, help me, help me, help me, he's going to kill me, he's going to kill me. She's only 5'2", about 90 pounds. Help me, help me, help me, he's going to kill me. And here comes her 22-year-old boyfriend. She was 35, by the way. And she crawls under your car. You're pumping gas. And she crawls. She's screaming, help me, help me, help me, help me. And here he comes, bends down right by your feet. You're pumping gas. He bends down right by your feet. You're pumping gas. He grabs her legs, drags her out from underneath the car, puts her over his shoulder like a killed deer, and throws her in his vehicle and drives away with her. And you just fill up. Pay and drive away. Hard-heartedness. I would hope I'd had the courage to just spray that guy down with the gasoline, for one. And then when he was down on the ground, well, you don't want to know what I would do then. But my point is, how do you just watch this? And other people, because it was posted, other people filming it. They're filming it. Instead of getting involved in helping this 90-pound, 35-year-old woman get away from this abusive boyfriend of hers of 22 years old. Unbelievable. Hard-hearted, merciless. Brethren, I could go on and on, and I'm sure you're thinking of other stories that you've heard that you know as well would illustrate this very much. Implacable. Meaning no gain of goodwill. There's no way you can talk to this individual and gain goodwill from this person because he's not wired, she's not wired that way. It's all about them. It's all about their ideologies. It's all about you understanding them. I don't need to understand you. Don't expect me to listen to you. You listen to me. You listen to me. You ever, you know, those are the kind of people. You cannot gain favor with them. You cannot get them to understand your point of view because they don't listen. They won't cooperate. They won't have a conversation. It's all about combat. It's all about conflict. It's all about you coming to my side. Forget about me coming to your side. That doesn't count. Your side is old, archaic, and frankly, unuseful. And so it goes on here in Paul's continuing description to Timothy. He says here in chapter 3, false accusers. And false accusers are, of course, just that, slanderers and traducers, which basically, again, speaks unfavorably, talking about them in unfavorable or people in unfavorable fashions. Without self-control, all I got to do is remind all of us of Portland, you know, Spokane, Chicago, where the shootings are just out of this world, New York City, all the major cities now, or not all, but many of the major cities, many of the major cities here in the United States are war zones in some cases, whether they be infiltrated with homeless people, whether they're infiltrated with crime and all kinds of violence. It goes without saying that self-control is far and few between. And then it goes on here and says, fierce. This word, when I looked it up, really brought home a lot of visuals for me. It means savage. Greek word means savage. Paul says in the latter days, It's going to be perilous, dangerous, fierce, and we could say savage. And I think of Jeffrey Dahmer going out, predator, getting men up to his apartment, chopping them up and eating them, putting them in the freezer. I think of different situations that are basically around us now, public, demon worship, sacrificing children, doing things that are now really very, very horrible, even hard to understand. Ghislaine Maxwell, how does a woman groom other girls, young girls, 12, 13, 14 years old, for a sex maniac, a guy named Jeffrey Dahmer, who's dead, by the way, and I hope he is. I know that there is, or, Epstein, thank you. I got Jeffrey Dahmer on my mind. But Jeffrey Epstein. And as a result, betray the trust of these young girls who trusted her, and then she, betraying them, turned them over to this ruthless sexual maniac. Or I could go on, Allison Mack, who worked for Nixium, and Bronfman, Claire Bronfman, the one who is basically the Harris to Seagram 7. She's got more money than you and I'll ever see, probably combined in this room. And she's doing this kind of stuff. Both of them are in jail now. Claire's in jail for 7 years, and the other one, she's in jail for 3 years, Allison Mack, the movie star. And then you have this guy, Peso Robles, just convicted this week, 52 sex acts on four girls, ages, 1 year old to 13. Four girls. Did it for 8 years. 8 years he got away with it. He's going to jail for 280. You're not going to build that guy back up. You're not going to rehab that guy. You're not going to rehab him. Sad. This is the ruthless, savage, it's savage world we live in. Paul wasn't kidding. Now that you begin to put images behind what's unfolding in this 21st century, how can you ignore these things? And these things, brethren, are indeed happening around us. And Paul, it was like prophetic. He knew despisers of those that are good, people that stand up for virtue, people that stand up and say they don't want transgenderism in their schools and go to the board meetings and get behind the lectern and try to say basically why they don't like it and are talked down or not listened to. Or here recently in the state of Ohio, a female legislature, who wanted to pass a law of not allowing girls to be competing against biological boys who claimed they're girls. And so she was standing up at the lectern and basically stating her case about this piece of legislation just this last week or a week before last to pass this law that would prevent boys who think they're girls to compete in girls' sports. And while she's talking, the legislature sitting behind their desks are going, I mean, what? And she was like, what's going on? She's trying to present her case. And you got, and then they panned and they showed men 50, 60 years old banging on their desks like 5-year-olds. I want my milk. I want my cookies. You know. I mean, it was mind-blowing to see mature men and women doing this kind of thing, shouting her down as she attempts to explain her legislation that would prevent biological boys to compete in girls' sports. What's wrong with that? If I were a girl, forget it. You're not going to be winning anything anymore. You can't compete against Laurel Hubbard, weightlifting boy who's got five times the testosterone of the highest testosterone girl in the group. There's no girl that's going to compete with that professional weightlifter, biologically a man. I mean, it's just, it's not even sensible. You know what I'm saying? It's not even sensible. And so, brethren, we are in a time where really so much is being fulfilled here with what Paul is saying. Here's another one, and this one is certainly one I could talk on for a long time, and I'm already, you know, slowing down here, but betrayers, traitors, and this Greek word basically means surrenderer and betrayer, to give to the enemy. And you have here an interesting development of which now has been just released as of July 1. Judge Loretta Presecki has decided she is going to unseal. Remember, I've been talking about indictments being sealed. Well, they're going to unseal these indictments with regard to Ghislaine Maxwell, and she's announced the breakthrough of the unsealing documents related to the case. Presiding Judge Loretta Presecki ruled that dozens more documents about Maxwell's various dealings will be made public within the next 2 weeks. The federal judge has approved the unsealing of these documents related to formerly close Epstein associate Ghislaine Maxwell. The highlight of the public interest, the highlight of these documents of public interest, being evidence financially linking the Clinton Global Initiative Foundation with Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. Interesting, if this indeed does prove of such types of connection, and consequently these particular documents are indeed what you could say useful in that fashion. Lincoln, over 180 years ago, mentioned this, and I wanted to essentially share this with you, because certainly it goes to this idea of treason, of surrendering, traitors. Bernie Madoff, traitor. People had their estates with him, invested. Some of his clients committed suicide. Others of them were living homeless on the streets after giving him $500,000 of their, you know, their finances, their retirement and so forth, and he went out and spent it and basically Ponzi schemed it. Borrowed from Jordan and Carly, and I spent it and paid Jordan what Carly gave me to make him think that everything is okay. And then I get Frank, and I get him into the mix, and I pay Joetta, and I take Frank's money. You know, I mean, that's how the Ponzi scheme works. But when there's nobody to get, then you see everybody who's swimming in their underwear, because you can't get any more free and good money, fresh money. You see, you got to have fresh money all the time for a Ponzi scheme. Anyway, Lincoln says this: at what point then is the approach of danger to be expected? He said this over 180 years ago, very prophetic. I answer, if it ever reach us, it must spring up amongst us. It cannot come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. He's talking about infiltration. He's talking about allowing counterintuitive ideas to come into our ideology, our republic of free market and free choice and freedoms, to essentially spoil it by rearranging things to cause the steering, the direction, to go in a different course, on a different track, and of which would then, of course, be a totally different ideology. And this is what he's saying here. If destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. As a nation of free men, we must live through all time or die of suicide. That's what he said. Self-destruct. And so I ask, and I think, and I, as you would also, I would hope, how does open borders feed into the preservation of our republic? How does that policy, forget the party, I'm not talking about parties, I'm saying the policy. How does a policy of open borders that has allowed about 1 million illegal immigrants and drugs galore, fentanyl and meth, like you wouldn't believe, record volumes, of which the fentanyl is primarily made in China, help our republic? Well, it doesn't. How does going back into a globalist program like the Paris Accord, where we will be spending billions, that is the United States, and China gets off basically spending nothing, and they're one of the biggest polluters in the world? Why is it our lot to carry the world? And we only have this little small section over here in North America. They've got all of Eurasia that they're polluting, as you could say. So my point is, we are in so many ways, brethren, as President Lincoln said, on the verge or on the precipice of basically fulfilling, if we allow these policies to continue to go on and infect and infiltrate our particular society and structure. How to Create a Socialist State by Saul Alinsky. I say these things. These are observations, brethren. And I'm just trying to make them aware so that you can begin to think and identify, connecting the dots. Saul Alinsky's How to Create a Socialist State states this: control health care. You control the health of the people, you control the people. Ooh. Poverty. Increase the level of poverty. Debt. Overspend the nation. Put the nation in such debt that it's unsustainable debt. Program after program, billions, and in some cases, trillions. And Trump was also part of that. He was a big spender, as was Reagan. Reagan, they were big spenders. Debt, generate debt. Gun control, disarm the people. Welfare, pay the people unemployment checks so high that they can't even make that kind of money working, and get them used to depending on the government, and they'll basically stay there. Education, infiltrate the education, and of course religion, remove God out of the system, and class warfare, divide the country up, whether it be race, whether it be class, like rich and poor, or how about this, election integrity, guns, sexual orientation. Or how about the flu? The flu, of all things, can divide the people. Yeah, we're seeing that. The flu, F-L-U, flu. Not F-L-Y, that's fly. But so much of this, you know, brethren, is used to divide us from each other. And you know what? It works sometimes, sadly, because we allow some of this to occur. He goes on, Paul does, as we continue here in chapter 3 real quickly, high-minded in this case, rash. That's also the Greek meaning of being basically high-minded. Lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. And that's pretty self-explanatory, where they essentially are fond of comfort and voluptuousness. And then verse 5, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. From such, turn away. And what are we talking about there in that last one? Well, we're talking about people who say, I love my country. I love my country. But let's cancel the 4th of July celebrations. I love my country. But let's go ahead and open our borders and defund the police. I love my country. Let's fund globalist programs or fund Marxist operations like Black Lives Matter or Antifa. I mean, brethren, we need to observe these things and recognize them for what they are and understand that they are counterproductive to the maintenance of our republic. And, of course, the cooperation. I can't even hardly wrap my mind around this one. Why in the world, with half of the politicians wanting to pursue an investigation to find the origin of this so-called coronavirus, SARS-2 virus, refuse and not cooperate with the group that would want to to hold somebody accountable for what has happened over the last 2 years. Brethren, I'm here to tell you, if nobody's held accountable for this, it will happen again. And maybe worse, maybe worse. So I transitioned into my concerns. And my concerns, brethren, as I mentioned already before, is that our nation is under siege. We've already had some dry runs. We've had some hacking going on in the oil industry. We had some hacking going on in the food industry. As we speak, the National Guard is being trained specifically for cyber hacking and cyber warfare. Why? Could it be our electrical grids are targeted and they've got news and they are trying to get ahead of the curve so that they perhaps can avoid or block a hack on our electrical grid? I don't know. But I do know this. The National Guard, as we speak, in some areas are being specifically trained for cyber attacks. So I have a recent speech that was analyzed by an Asian publication called Nikkei. And during this speech, which was marking the 100th anniversary of the CCP and its founding, Xi Jinping, the president of China, urged all Chinese nationals living abroad, and keep in mind, what was the percentage that I said the other day of the Chinese students are indeed CCP operatives? I think it's 30%, somewhere around there, that kids are in college here in the United States and are known to be CCP operatives. They're working for the government and obviously looking to do whatever they can to share our information with the heads back in China. He says, Xi Jinping urges all Chinese nationals living abroad to contribute to the great rejuvenation of the Chinese nation, upheld the military as a defender of China's national dignity and development interests, and warned foreign forces bloody their heads, warned foreign forces would bloody their heads against the steel wall of 1.4 billion Chinese people if they tried to bully or oppress China. Now, this was a publication. It just came out here July 1st. And it was a warning from China in that speech, embedded in that speech by Xi Jinping. This from the Epoch Times, General Milley has something to say with regard to China. And this falls into this category of concerns that I think all of us have. Top U.S. general warned Thursday Chinese regime is increasing its military capacity at a very serious and sustained rate, and said it could pose a threat to the worldwide stability and peace. Chairman Milley, Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest military guy in the military, said, "It's necessary the United States retain our competitive technology edge over the Chinese Communist Party," which comes after Joe Biden, President Joe Biden's Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin, raised similar concerns in recent days about the rhetoric coming from the CCP, as the United States and China have remained adamant over Taiwan. Keep it in mind, brother. Keep it in mind. Taiwan is something the Chinese firmly believe is theirs. And Taiwan doesn't think that. And we, the United States, are tied to treaties to defend Taiwan. He goes on. He says, the United States and China have remained adamant over Taiwan, the CCP's human rights violations, 2, and the disputes over territory, 3. He says here, the request is driven by our recognition that our enemy, and he says competitors, especially China, continue, this is Austin talking, to advance their capabilities. Austin says, though, during the hearing at the Senate Armed Service Committee, we must outpace those advances to remain a credible deterrent to conflict. I mean, how can you be a competitor and be worried about conflict? Sounds like they're an enemy, not competitor, you know, if you're worried about conflict. Anyway, Milley also noticed that the combined total defense spending of China and Russia is now greater than the United States, although he did not say how he reached that conclusion. Chin Quan, Wu Qin. Wu Qin, a spokesman for China's Ministry of National Defense, alleged that the United States is seriously undermining stability in the region. Wu then threatened anyone, without providing names, he didn't say any names, but who dared to split Taiwan from China would see a resolute attack head-on with the Chinese army. This is their equivalent of defense minister talking. Any nation that tries to separate Taiwan from China, in their mind, Taiwan belongs to China. Any nation that does that will receive an attack by China. The United States just renewed their trade deal this week with Taiwan. I'm here to tell you, China's not looking very favorably on that. They're not looking very favorably on that at all. And so we've got some serious conditions that we are surrounded by where we sit in the timeline of human history. And the background of America's 245th birthday of this experimental republic is, interestingly enough, according to Sir John Bagot Glubb, who passed away a couple of years ago but was a specialist in the analysis of nations and how old they are in terms of their lifetime that they are basically involved with, and that is the average that he himself concluded was about 250 years of life that most empires, whether it was the Greeks, whether it was the Syrians, and whether or not it was, for all intents and purposes, the other nations that would be in that area, the Arabs, the Ottoman, I couldn't think of the Ottoman Empire, all in the area of about 250 years. And so we have this, what you could say, not necessarily timeline of 250 years, but it's just interesting to note the average of all nations lasted about 250 years or so. So the point that I want to make, and I guess this is falls into the area of concerns as well as we wrap this up, and I just want to bring this to all of our attention, because going forward, brethren, we're not out of the woods by far. We're not out of the woods with this pandemic, with this idea of this, what seemingly is a bioweapon that was indeed released, whether on purpose, whether accident, don't know. Whether or not it was even really purposed in the terms of the virus, because maybe it wasn't about the virus. Maybe it was about the vaccine. Don't know. Don't know. But I do know this. A principle has been applied, and it has been applied before by Marxists and socialists. And in this particular case, at the Nuremberg trials, Hermann Göring testified to a question. How did you get the German people to accept all that you guys did? And Göring, under oath, stated this. It was very easy. It had nothing to do with Nazism. It had something to do with human nature. You can do it in a Nazi, socialist, communist regime, in a monarchy, and even in a democracy. The only thing that needs to be done to enslave people is scare them. Wow. Scare them. You can make them do then, once you scare them, what you want them to do. Hermann Göring said that at the Nuremberg trials while under oath. Amazing, brethren. And so here we see Pastor Paulinski not taking any of that. He's not going to be scared. But we do see people that are indeed scared for much of what we see developing and going around us. So there's tension building around the country. And as this country begins to continue to push at China to find the answers to how what is believed, and it's coming, it seems, more evidence to the surface, did they do this and why? The tension is going to build. Because I'm not so certain China's really excited about disclosing anything. And wars were started for lesser reasons. People were assassinated for lesser reasons. So, on America's 245th birthday, I want to encourage all of us. I do really want to encourage all of us. Because of the observations, and I only touched on the surface, time's run out on me, but the observations and the concerns, that we pray for our country, that we really get intense, brethren, about praying for our leaders, that we really do put ourselves into our appeals for those that are running our country and those in Canada that are going through this stage two restrictive environment that they're in. The Church of God International congregations up there haven't met in many, many months. And the fact of it is, and already the articles are being written, that churches are suffering from this, and it may very well be people are not going to be coming back to fellowship. They're not coming back to fellowship. Why? They got used to staying at home. They got used to doing something else on, in their case, in many cases, Sunday, as we have, and I'm here to admit, loss of interest of individuals who no longer keep Sabbath because they got out of the habit, they got out of the style, the routine, the borders, the disciplines that discipline their life for so many years in some cases. So it is important that we pray for God's church, that we pray for the nation, we pray for our leaders, and we pray to God that He will indeed award us more time to do the work, to hopefully spread the news, the gospel, and allow time for people to repent and get baptized so that they can indeed begin to align their lives with Jesus Christ. And maybe, just maybe, we will find God's mercy in all of this, brethren, and have opportunity to have additional time. But any way you look at it, I want to leave you with the words of Paul here as we wrap this up. Over here in Romans and in chapter 13, and in verse 11, and I'd like to just read this, and then I'll go ahead and sit down here. Verse 11, "And that knowing the time that is now, it is high time to awake out of sleep." And I've only just touched the surface of what I've been talking about today. I could have went on and on and on and talked for another hour. You'd have thrown tomatoes at me, I'm sure. But my point is that, I mean, there's so much to talk about these things that are essentially traumatizing us. And I could go into so much more detail about some of the things that we are contending with today. But Paul says here, it's important. It's important that we wake up out of sleep. "For now is our salvation nearer than when we believed, and we are going into fierce times." I often thought about the fact that the police come through here because another restriction comes down and only 10 people are allowed in this room. What are we going to do? Put my head on the platter? Maybe. Will you bail me out? You know, I mean, that's the point. They walked into this church services, and you'll see him on the internet screaming at them, telling them, "Get out! Get out! Gestapos, get out of here! You're acting like Gestapos, get out!" Because he's seen it before. He's from Poland. And they got out. They fined him. They gave him a ticket, $10,000, that he's responsible for. But that's what we're looking at now. These are serious times, brother. I can't emphasize that. And pushes coming to shoving, who is going to be standing? Because I'll tell you, black robes are hard to find. You know what I'm talking about, those black robe ministers of the Revolutionary War. And we are indeed under siege. Paul says this, "It's high time, for now is our salvation near. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness. Let us put on the armor of light," or the armor of God, same thing. "Let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and envy, But put you on the Lord Jesus Christ. Get close to God. It's time. It's never been more important now and more poignant than to get close to Christ and make not provisions for the flesh to fulfill the lusts thereof. Brethren, pray to God. Pray for our leaders. Pray for our nation. Pray for the church. Pray for the ministry, that we will have the courage, because that's what it's going to take. God's church needs to begin now to make a shift, and we have to. We have no choice to become courageous, brave, and bold, and be willing to stand for what you believe in and be able to speak out on what you believe so that those that you speak to understand clearly why you stand for the things that you stand for, because it's important. All of us may be called on from time to time to give a witness. Jesus said, don't give it any thought what you're going to say. Just get up there and say it.